Jill, as some of you guys know, is the head of the program committee. She asked me to talk, and I thought about it for a second. And then she's like, you know, you got that art show up. Maybe you can do something about that. And that sold me on it. Because really, it's like, if somebody gives me a reason to talk about art for a while, I can just go to town. It's my favorite thing to talk about, and most of you guys who have talked with me know that. So the title of this is The Creative Process as a Spiritual Practice. And I'd like to start things off with a quote from the American social reformer John Dewey. Shouldn't need no introduction around these parts. Art is not the possession of the few who are recognized writers, painters, and musicians. It is the authentic expression of any and all individuality. Those who have the gift of creative expression in unusually large measure disclose the meaning of the individuality of others to those others. In participating in the work of art, they become artists in their activity. They learn to know and honor individuality in whatever form it appears. The fountains of creative activity are discovered and released. The free individuality, which is the source of art, is also the final source of creative development and time. My talk this morning can almost be considered as a sort of part two to Jill's talk last week. Jill talked a lot last week about one of our UU sources, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold it. I think that's such a beautiful concept to consider, and that's one of the many reasons I consider myself a proud UU. I think that concept, that idea of that openness to that transcending mystery and wonder, I think that's the hallmark of a faith that's rooted in wisdom. And just like the Buddha says, as I paraphrase a little bit, we should experience reality for ourselves and not merely take someone else's word for it. Now, I consider myself an artist. It's a role I'm comfortable identifying with at this point in my life. It wasn't always one that I was comfortable putting out there. I went to school to learn how to teach art to young people because I love the creative process. I love seeing it awaken in others. I was speaking with my friend and mentor, Bob Vohr, a few weeks ago, fellow painter, really taught me a lot about what I do now. And I told him that I think if I had to define my spirituality, my religion in some way, my belief system, it would probably be centered around the creative process. And I want to give you a little background on Bob, because I think he does kind of play a central role in my thinking about the creative process. And he's a really special guy to me. I met Bob when he was living in Murfreesboro a few years ago. He and his wife are in their 60s, and Bob was working at the VA at the time. A mutual friend introduced Bob to my little group of artist friends at MTSU, and he fit right in. I later learned that Bob was actually one of the first Navy SEALs, and he fought in the Vietnam War. It wasn't something that he talked about very much, and looking at him, you would not expect it. He had the look of an older hippie, to put it generally. Wartime wasn't something that he talked about very much, but occasionally something would remind him of his military years, and he would tell me a little bit about the horrors of war. You see, this is particularly poignant because Bob and I share a sort of a curse that a lot of artists have, and that is the heightened sensitivity to the world around us. Now, this can cause all sorts of problems, from depression to anxiety to crying when you look into the eyes of a cow. Oh, right. By the way, Bob and his wife are currently cattle ranchers in Wyoming. And now he battles with ethical dilemmas every day as he ranches his 100 head of cattle more like they were his pets. He's told me stories about him just going out to the pasture and sitting amongst a field of cows as they slowly come to greet him, and looking on, and eventually they'll start to lick his feet. No joke. So and this has also prompted Bob to become a vegan. Which, I mean, again, and not exactly what I'm talking about today, but I think that's a pretty poignant thing to think about, the kind of person that he is. So Bob and I talk a lot about the creative process as we both try to keep active, creating new art in whatever medium we happen to be exploring at the moment. For me, it's usually painting or sound art. For Bob, he's a painter also. He does He's been doing some video work lately. It's pretty interesting. Today I'd like to outline what I think is my basic creative process, though it changes and evolves constantly. And I'd like to dedicate the talk to Bob, and I hope that he gets to hear it. I'm going to send it off to him. So I'd like to link that creative process to the idea of a spiritual practice. I have five basic steps that I kind of outline in my process, and I'll definitely, disclaimer, I've borrowed pieces from all sorts of other thinkers who've talked about the same idea. So my five basic steps. Number one, make time to create. Number two, get some distance from the new creation. Number three, make time to reflect. Number four, come back for revision. And number five, claim the work. And I'll go ahead and say, as I'm sure you all know, I'm not the definitive expert on the creative process. And I really don't think one could truly ever exist. So hopefully I'll say something that resonates with you on some level, but feel free to disagree with me, and please let me know what your creative process looks like, maybe during the coffee break a little later. And I'll go ahead and tell you, most of the stuff I'm relating to does relate to painting, but I'll throw in some other things as well, but I can really only talk about what I know, so painting and music is kind of what I do. So let's get into it. So the first step, making time to create. Now the first and emotion, I think it's the first and it's the most essential part of the creative process, is simply setting time aside to create. It seems so simple, but as the saying goes, you are what you do. I learned long ago that if I wanted to be an artist, I had to find time to set aside to develop that part of myself. I had to make it a priority. For me, this means I have to give myself over to long periods of sustained attention. Those of you familiar with meditation will understand what I'm talking about. You're giving yourself over to mindfulness. And in that mindfulness, I helped creating art. In the moment of creation, I'm solely invested in whatever task is at hand. This might mean I'm timing brushstrokes with my breath, or painting slowly in rhythmic pulses, or maybe just a lost in kind of an ecstatic fury of creation and motion and revelry. See, that's the thing, the creative state can manifest itself in a lot of different ways, which is why it's so fascinating and it's really so fun. And there's a misconception, I think, around the idea of inspiration when it comes to this part of the art-making process. While I indeed have had flashes of inspiration, as you would call it, I'm sure you all have had these as well. It's like when an idea or a reaction seems so perfect and full of potential and you just can't stop creating. I think that the activity of creation also takes place on a lot of mundane levels. Oftentimes, one simply must set up a space to create and work on art in a very real sense. And the work part of the equation doesn't always seem as romantic or exciting as that initial flash, but I find that getting into a habit of intentionally working on art has led to a deeper and more nuanced understanding of what that creative process really looks like. Some folks might find this to be kind of childlike or selfish, and I guess in a way, setting aside time to create certainly can be childlike and selfish. But it's a type of play, and here's the thing. Some folks might regard it as unimportant. I don't think so. See, it's the act of play that nurtures the human spirit and makes life worth living. In some ways, artists get a free pass on this issue, which is wonderful. I mean, really, it's really true. We get to act like little kids and can justify it with the "I'm working on my art" excuse. I've many times done that. Even if you don't make art, I encourage you to make time for unstructured play in your life. And I know Carol Sue and I have talked about this at great length. It's relaxing, rejuvenating, and nourishes your spirit. So let's go on here to step number two. Walk away from the creations. This is after our initial kind of, act of creation. Now it's time to walk away. The second step of my creative process is to make a point of walking away from the creation. It takes a certain sensitivity to know when it's time to walk away from something you've been slaving over for a few hours or days. This is part of the mystery of art making, in that it requires the maker to abandon his or her own work for a moment in order to get some distance and some clarity. That distance and clarity, those are important words and ideas that I want to focus on for a second. When I'm in the throes of creation, I can sometimes get a little overzealous. Maybe I get lost in the sensuousness of the paint a little too much. And before I know it, I've gone overboard and lost that precious aesthetic balance I was looking for. That's why the act of walking away is just as important as taking time to create in the first place. This gives the mind time to reconsider what has been started. At this point, I usually look at a painting from different angles, maybe even turning it upside down for a fresh perspective, and then I take a break, sometimes a few hours or even a day or more. And that leads me to the next step, a little segue here, which is making time to reflect. Now, this step requires time away from the act of creation that brought this artwork into being. In my own practice, this takes shape as a walk outside, some sitting meditation, or just mindfully focusing on a task that is not art making, maybe putting away the dishes or mowing the lawn. The point of reflection for me is to allow my mind time to open up and release any sort of tension that I might be holding on around the work. This also means letting go of any particular notions I might be having about the way my artwork should be for a moment. And in a strange way, I'm actually letting my mind forget what I was working on for a moment so that when I come back to it, I could do so with a fresh perspective. Now, during the school year, as was mentioned, I'm a teacher. This is easy for me because I'm forced to work on my own art in short little bursts of time throughout the week, interspersed with my responsibilities and schedules as a teacher. Even if I'm not consciously thinking about art, the act of getting into a different frame of mind away from the artwork I'm working on really helps a great deal. I like to think of that the work is perhaps marinating in my subconscious for a while, soaking up any of the other flavorful juices that might be hanging around in there. And I'm talking in a metaphor here because it's almost impossible to fully articulate what happens at the finer points of the creative process. The best I can do is try to keep it alive and healthy. One of my personal favorite film directors and artists, David Lynch, put it this way. Ideas are like fish. If you want to catch a little fish, you can stay in the shallow water. But if you want to catch the big fish, you've got to go deeper. Down deep, the fish are more powerful and more pure. They're huge and abstract, and they're very beautiful. So, this reflective process is certainly important, but it really leads the way for another burst of creative energy in this process, which takes place as the artist comes back to the work for revision, and that's the fourth step. So coming back to the work for revision, this is the moment when a work of art can really soar, in my opinion. This was one of the biggest lessons I learned in my studio classes at college. And those of you who have experienced art classes or something like it at a college level know what I'm talking about. In some respects, this act of reapproaching a work of art is the hallmark of an artist that has, in some respect, matured. Let me explain that a little more so I don't sound any more completely pretentious than I already am. Say a young artist is working on a painting. She's really going all out and just feeling that good creative energy flowing. Eventually she gets to a point where she's so enveloped in the process that she exclaims, "This is my best painting ever, a true masterpiece. It is finished." Oh. That's the word I hear so much in the classroom, and that's like this signaling the end. I will not look at this anymore. It is finished. You see, at that point, she is still in the throes of the initial creative flow. That is actually coloring her experience of the work a little. It's like seeing the world through the rose-tinted glasses, and that's totally fine, and it's great just to revel in and enjoy that, but the painting itself might be in sort of a pupae stage still. It's just beginning to emerge. There might be hidden layers that can be finessed out of the ether. Or maybe just a little touch-up or two. The problem is, the artist will never know this unless she comes back to the piece for revision. That's why that finished work, oof, that finished, that when I hear it, I'm just like, well, let's say something else. Maybe it's just resting for right now. It can be a painful process to go through. You can come back to the unspeakable masterpiece of last night, that thing that was so beautiful. Ah, it was amazing. Only now you find some flaws. Oh no, I can't trust my aesthetic senses. I'm no good. I'm an amateur. I shouldn't even bother with art. Who am I kidding? Oh yes, that kind of destructive self-talk can come in so easily. But it's just a signpost along the way to show you that you are progressing. Check out this quote from Ira Glass. Again, probably no introduction needed for this crowd, but Ira Glass hosts a tremendous show on NPR called This American Life. And he's got an interesting story himself. Basically a saint around here. And Ira says, I love this quote, I love it. Nobody tells this to people who are beginners. I wish someone told me. All of us who do creative work, we get into it because we have good taste, but there is this gap. For the first couple of years, you make stuff. It's just not that good. It's trying to be good. It has potential, but it's not. But your taste, the thing that got you into the game, is still killer. And your taste is why your work disappoints you. A lot of people never get past this phase. They quit. Most people I know who do interesting creative work went through years of this. We want our work. We know our work doesn't have the special thing that we want it to have. We all go through this, and if you are just starting out, or you're still in this phase, you gotta know it's normal. The most important thing you can do is do a lot of work. Put yourself on a deadline so that every week you'll finish one story. Now, he's a writer. It is only by going through a volume of work that you will close that gap, and your work will be as good as your ambitions. And I took longer to figure out how to do this than anyone else I've met. It's gonna take a while. It's normal to take a while. You just gotta fight your way through. I love that quote. I put it over my sink in my classroom in hopes that someone would take a minute to read it as they're cleaning out their brushes. My coworker looked at that, he's like, it's a little long. Well, it is. But it always gives me some hope. So after coming back to the work now and revising it either a little or a lot, then you get to that last step. But even if the work gets scrapped in the end, it doesn't make it to the last step. It's okay. It's important to notice the process that you went through and take it as a growing experience. Right. Easier said than done, I know. But it's worth trying to keep in mind so you don't drive yourself completely bonkers looking at the pile of garbage you might be accumulating. Anyway, the final step of my personal philosophy of the creative process is to claim the work and let it go. Claiming the work. Now, this might seem like it's the easy part, but it actually can take quite an emotional toll on the artist. Let me relate it a little to my own art school experience. In upper division studio classes, you were required to submit work for critique a few times every semester. Some of you are probably familiar with what this might look like. Everybody in the class, along with the professor, gathers around your work and talks about it. Or just stares blankly at it. Or rips it to shreds verbally. It feels like a roll of the dice in some way. Is the professor pissed off today? Did your fellow classmates get any sleep last night? Did they even give enough of a care to bother commenting on your artwork that you spent a great deal of energy on? Were you able to coerce any of your friends beforehand to say something nice? All of these factor into the college-level critique process, which can sometimes be enlightening, but often feels like standing in front of a firing range. I've seen students reduced to tears multiple times, but really, it's an overall good experience and great practice for claiming your artwork. Any kind of BS is usually called out pretty quickly, and I learned that I had to be completely honest with myself when I was making my work so I could at least back it up myself. That honesty started to come through occasionally, and thankfully I was able to get a few good critiques in to boost my fragile artist ego. I had friends that were obsessed with this process, though, and it almost seemed like they didn't actually enjoy anything. So I caution against taking the whole critique thing too far, but still, the act of claiming your work means you've gone through some hard times together, you and the artwork, that is. It means being able to talk about your work from a place of ownership, maybe even without fully knowing the meaning behind it. Again, it's a hard thing to define clearly. It's almost as if the work is more fully a part of you, while simultaneously being able to stand on its own. I think writers probably have the best sense of this. When a story or script is done, it has a life of its own. Those characters, those words, they have a life of their own. They go on to exist in the mind of the reader in ways that the author probably never imagined. Yet that essential element of the work still remains in the heart of the author, heart of the artist. So that's my basic recipe for the creative process. Making time to create, get some distance from the new creation, make time to reflect, come back to the work for revision, and claim the work. As I stated earlier, I think I could define my spirituality as simply the creative process. And what I mean by that is that the creative process is something that brings me closer to understanding some sort of purpose in my own life. It gets me in touch with something inside of myself that I don't fully comprehend, that creative spark that I think all human beings have. When I work on art, I feel like I'm doing some sort of spiritual work. The closest thing I can relate it to is shamanism. Now, those of you who are familiar with shamanic cultures know that a shaman serves his or her people by communing with the spirit world through altered states of consciousness. The shaman brings a sense of communion with the divine to others who might not experience it directly. Sometimes a shaman forces a community to re-examine itself, often in uncomfortable ways, or look at a problem differently. And I think, I hope, artists serve a similar role in our modern society. An artist who honestly engages with their creations must work on understanding the creative process that guides them. Artists work on finding ways to express the inexpressible, explain the unexplainable, and to F the ineffable. Okay, I had to steal that little humor from Douglas Adams there. We do this without necessarily thinking about the implications that art has for the whole of society. But without the artist, our society would be missing a crucial guidepost. I say this not to puff myself up to make what I do seem more important than it is, but instead to illustrate the spiritual significance of art making. It does have an impact on the outside world, whether or not the artist realizes it. And I hope this talk, I know it's been maybe kind of like talking shop for artists, but I hope you've been able to glean something from my words, even if you don't find yourself in the kind of creative side of things. I still think you have that spark in you, whether or not you fully admit it. I bet there's something you do that uses that energy. I fully believe that art making has the power to transform people. And I try to be an advocate for contemporary art practice whenever I can. If nothing else, I hope I've reminded you of one of our sources, the direct experience of that transcending mystery, wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to forces which create and uphold it. Thank you.